I'm Dr. Sarah, a licensed chiropractor.
And I'm Val, clinical research enthusiast and international board-certified lactation consultant.
We are passionate about helping you navigate women's health and wellness topics naturally.
We bring the information and options
so you can make empowered choices.
This is the Empowered Women podcast. Just a reminder, the information contained in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any disease or illness or be taken as medical advice. Always check with your healthcare provider for medical advice.
I'm terrified. I'm sure I could figure it out, but
it's easy.
So Melanie is joining us from Roots Restored Wellness is the name of your practice, correct?
That is it. Yes.
She is a mother herself, which we love having empowered mamas on this podcast. Mm-hmm. You have an interesting background, Melanie. So you had or have celiac disease, correct?
Yes.
And you were a photographer, professional photographer for a long time. And then you kind of shifted your focus to foundational health. So can you tell us a little bit, just how did this happen? How do you go from photography, which is like beautiful art, and then you just decide you're going to heal all the women because you helped yourself?
Yeah, you know, well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to be here and just share, you know, some little tidbits of info for your listeners. But yeah, you know, I was diagnosed almost 10 years ago. And so while I did newborn and baby infant photography, and I loved it, it was really special to be able to capture those kinds of moments for families. But, you know, celiac disease comes on and it kind of changes your whole world. And for me, you know, as a busy mom, I had often just, you know, heard from doctors and from friends that, you know, oh, you're just a busy mom of three. That's why you're so tired. And when I finally found a doctor who would listen to me, it was like a breath of fresh air. First of all, just to have someone to listen to me and say, you know, I'm exhausted. I'm so tired doing the most mundane things, like exhausted. This is beyond mom of three little kids kind of thing. So when I received that diagnosis, I was actually so grateful, because there was an answer, there was a reason. I wasn't crazy. And you know, it gave me the chance to take control of my health. And I remember the day I got the call and I was like, cool, what is celiac? I don't even know what that is. I have no idea. you know, and thankfully at the time I could go online and there was some information about what that is and gluten and I couldn't eat it. And I was like, okay. So from that day, that's basically, you know, what I stuck to was 100% gluten-free diet. But, you know, my journey from that point on was, you know, great. I can accomplish and I can rock this 100% gluten-free life. But I did start to feel a lot better. I mean, I had some crazy symptoms, not just exhaustion, but, for example, I would eat an entire bag, like the bag of ice you get at the grocery store. I would consume one of those every day. It was, whoa. I mean, my hydration was probably average, but like, that's not healthy. And I knew that wasn't. So to have an answer within 2 weeks of changing my diet, that was completely appalling and like crazy to me that I even liked that. It was kind of like a mind, you know, screw a little bit. So anyway, you know, as the years progressed, I just continued to have more and more symptoms pile on. And it was, you know, some weight gain is fine because I was underweight, but I continued to have like weight gain that was more than what it was above normal range. Let's put it that way. Right. You know, and I'd have doctors say, well, welcome to this age. This is what happens at this age. And I'm like,
I hate that. Can I just say how much I hate that? For everybody listening, no, like, no, no, no. I had a guy one time tell me, oh, and this was in like my early 30s, late 20s. And I was complaining and she goes, well, you know, if you just look at an M&M now, you'll gain weight. I'm like, lady, I'm like not even 30. I mean,
it's so sad. It's so sad, you know, that's so sad. So, I mean, that's the kind of things that I got consistently. I had breakouts that I had never had. I had great skin, you know, all through my, this is mid-30s is when I was diagnosed. So this was like, I have these breakouts, these rashes, these weight gain. I had hormone imbalances that I know now with hormone imbalances with really challenging menstrual cycles. And I never got answers. I never had, even after my diagnosis, never had someone sit down and say, okay, here's where we're at. You have celiac disease. And then here's these steps that we can do to help you to thrive, to help you. I mean, I'm never going to heal from celiac disease. I will always have celiac disease, but you can absolutely rebuild and rebalance your health and thrive within the parameters of that. And I never had anyone do that. I still have never had anyone do it. And I just didn't accept that. That's not acceptable. So that is why I'm here. And there are so many women who experience the same thing of just the, you know, eat gluten-free and then that's it. And you're set on your merry way. So there's so much more to our health than that.
Well, it's like, yes, celiac is the diagnosis, but if you've had this for a decade, 2 decades, and you don't know, your gut is just destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, it's destroyed.
It's not going to do anything for the destruction that has already happened.
Exactly. And that's the thing. If you're at the point where you have celiac disease, you definitely have, you know, digestive issues that have this, you didn't just wake up one day with celiac. It was a progression of getting there. So yeah.
Well, and I think, Melanie, you were even going to see this, like, pretty much most people's guts are destroyed. It's not even just people with celiac. Like, I feel like you might have been going there when you just made that comment a little bit ago. But, I mean, with the glyphosate and everything in our, like, I mean, people have to understand, like, foundational gut health and kind of get back to the root of healing it and then taking other steps for all the other symptoms or diagnoses then that they have. We've done so much damage to our, you know, our bodies, and we don't even realize it, you know, throughout our lifetime and all the modern conveniences and the medications, you know, you guys all know that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think that everyone to some degree has dysfunction going on, and that can stem from a lot of different places within our body. But I think we all have some level of dysfunction. And if that's unaddressed, then that's where you see these cascade of symptoms. And, you know, unfortunately, I think we're just starting to turn the corner with holistic health. But, you know, generations before us, it's like the doctor knows everything. And while doctors do have their place, they are very educated people. And they are, you know, they have their place. I'm not discrediting doctors whatsoever, but I think there's this new realm of holistic health where people do and are starting to understand that they do have a choice and they do have the power to take some of that back, that control back into their own life. And, you know, make modifications in their daily life. They don't require medication. That don't require, you know, a prescription. There are things you can do that allow you to have that control.
When it's like, I mean, we have a friend who has Crohn's, and we have a friend who has ulcerative colitis. And my husband has ulcerative colitis. So, like, we go down this rabbit hole quite a bit. Yeah. But those two friends have been on 3 or 4 biologics in the last 7 years, to the point where, like, my one friend cannot take any more biologics, but refused to change lifestyle.
Right. And two, how often are they spoken to about diet and lifestyle, but just diet in general? How do you, and you know, like with me, with celiac disease and the women that I help, it's yes, gluten-free. Yes. But what about everything else?
Right.
It comes back to that, all that foundational health that
gluten-free doesn't equal healthy.
Correct.
Right.
It doesn't.
I do want to say, a lot of times biologics and the immune suppressants are thrown at conditions like this. And coming from a pharmaceutical background, the side effects long-term or even short-term compared to the benefits you're getting from those medications. Like, I do understand you're hospitalized and maybe they have their place temporarily to get over a flare or whatever it is, but there's some serious consequences and side effects to taking some of those things. So I know,
like, every day just eat ice cream. Come on.
Yeah, it's very, you know, really, like, after you get over a flare up or, you know, something that presents, you really have to look long term, like Melanie saying, at how am I going to address this for the rest of my life? Like, every time something comes up, that's really how people should be thinking. And I'm here to say this as somebody with a lot of expertise in that area. I'm sorry, taking a pill or shot or a medication, unless it is your life is dependent on it, is not a long-term solution, friends. Like, it's just not. And good practitioners, there are many good doctors out there, Melanie, like you're saying, they know how to bridge the gap, or they will use medication to bridge the gap. And then you need to go start looking for other solutions to kind of hone that in down the line.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that foundational health piece, like I like to explain to women, is like a house. So, you know, you can't build a strong house if you don't have a solid foundation. And so all those foundational pieces, for someone with celiac disease or someone who doesn't have celiac disease, this really applies to every person. If you don't have these core foundations, then you're not going to be able to have that strong house, so to speak. And those things include, you know, yes, a really nutrient-rich diet, because food is our fuel. That is what fuels our body. The vitamins, the minerals, all the nutrients in the food that you consume is what fuels you. So, you know, I think it's important to think about, what are you eating? What are you putting into your body, and what is it doing for you? It should be doing something for you. And of course, balance is key too, because yeah, sometimes we want to have a bowl of ice cream, or it's a party and we want to have a drink, or we want to have a piece of cake. Totally normal. Or we want to have a piece of pizza. That's normal. But a nutrient-rich diet is really crucial. Blood sugar regulation is another piece of that foundational health piece. That's really crucial. That impacts, you know, hormones, that impacts a whole host of things, energy and sleep. Proper digestion is probably one of the top ones for me, because that's sort of where it all starts, where, you know, if you have struggles with your digestion, that's going to impact your metabolism. It's going to impact, you know, the nutrients that you can absorb from the food that you're giving yourself. It'll impact, you know, gut health. So that's a big one. And then fatty acid balance, making sure that you have a proper healthy fat in your diet is super, super key. And I think a lot of women are afraid of including fats in their diet. And I'm not talking about like French fries and that kind of fat. I'm talking about like avocados and fatty fish, you know, and other different types. But, you know, those fats are important. They're crucial for hormone production. They're crucial for the inflammatory process. So these are both to inflame and anti-inflame. So they're really crucial. Mineral balance is another one of those really important ones. Minerals are like spark plugs, and they fuel our everything, like thousands of reactions in our body. And the last piece of that foundational health is hydration. You got to be properly hydrated, or you can just forget about trying to function. So those are kind of the foundational pieces that I really like to share with people, because I don't think we talk enough about all of these different pieces that need to come together to help support your body.
Well, it's like, even if we do talk about it, it seems so simple that it can't be true, right? Mm-hmm. So somebody tells you to drink enough water throughout the day, and it's like, well, that's too easy. Well, no, that is. Most things in life are easy. You just have to be willing to commit and do it.
Well, and I think too, it's... Go ahead, Melanie. No, go.
I think it's just also, it can also be overwhelming in the same sense, because there is so much information out there, and I've experienced this myself. I have women that I work with, and it's the same thing where you're like, well, I don't even know where to start. What does that even mean? What fats should I be eating? How much should I be eating? What is a nutrient dense diet? I mean, I think being in this space, it all makes sense to me, but that's why I'm here, is to share what really does that mean for each individual person, because it's very different for each person out there. So
twofold question. Who do you find what is your like demographic that you find are coming to you in the highest volume? Like, are they people with celiac or other hormonal issues? And then does that dictate where you start?
So really I start every, I work with women, and I start everyone with that foundational piece. So we look at, we deep dive into all these pieces. It's when are you drinking, what are you drinking, and how much are you drinking? And then everything else, all the nutrient aspects, symptoms, signs and symptoms, you know, so we can determine what the heck is actually going on. What do your symptoms mean? Symptoms are really a communication from your body that it needs something. So we got to decode that and figure out what does that mean. Honestly, I have women between the ages of 25 to 65. It's a very broad range of women. Some who are on the jump of celiac disease, some who have had it for 20 years, some who don't have it at all. But they really, what's interesting is that all of these women need that foundational piece. They have either come from, you know, I guess diet culture, you want to call it, mentality, where they're working out really hard and they're reducing their calories, which hasn't supported their body correctly because of their imbalances, or they have celiac disease and they're struggling with symptoms. So it's very, it ranges quite a bit, but that still always comes back to that, those foundational needs, absolutely needing to be addressed first and foremost.
Okay. Go ahead, Sarah. I have like a very loaded question for you, only because because I like to get different practitioners' opinions on this, and I always get my practitioners' opinions on this too. So digestion is crucial, and the diet that you're consuming. So one that affects digestion, and for everyone listening, you should be going to the bathroom actually every time you eat. We've normalized once a day as human beings, and that's actually a really great goal, especially if you haven't been going regularly, but really you're supposed to have bowel movement every time you eat. So
that 1 to 3 times a day. Yep.
Yes. So that along with diet, and we've talked a lot about healthy fats, because I feel like Sarah and I see this all the time. She sees it in clinical practice, but I just know personally from interacting with so many women, yes, they're scared of fat because fat is the most nutrient dense. But for fertility, you need fat. Actually, for brain function, for hormones, everything. So my question to you is, what do you... do you always advise a specific type of diet, or is it individualized based off of what's going on with the person? Like, are you pro lots of meats and like, you know, like raw dairy and like that kind of stuff? Or are you more in the plant-based? Like, what do you think works best for women and the struggles that they're having?
Yeah. First of all, it is very bio-individual. So it definitely is something where each woman is different. It depends on what their current diet is. It's like, I like to meet women where they're at. So what are you currently doing, and how can we add to what you're doing? Maybe we need to swap some things out. So there's that piece of it. I'm definitely pro animal meat. Animal protein is a huge source of a lot of things. Like you said, the healthy omegas, and iron. You know, definitely iron. Yep. The good iron we need. So I'm definitely, pro, that, but I'm not saying, I wouldn't say like, gosh, it's probably like a 50% protein. And then the rest is a mix of, you know, carbs and, fats for me. Yeah. Because I think like a lot of women struggle with getting enough protein in their diet. You need protein in your diet. You need to eat animal protein specifically in order to create enough stomach acid, which in turn breaks the protein down so you can absorb all the goodness from it. But when you reduce that protein intake, you're also reducing your stomach acid, and stomach acid is, it disinfects your food also. So if you think about that, and you know, everything kind of goes down the digestive pipeline, you really want to make sure that you're digesting your food correctly and also disinfecting it. And stomach acid is that really big piece. So yeah, I'm definitely for animal protein. I'm definitely for just a very well-balanced, diet, but it is very bio-individual.
Yeah, Sarah and I always talk about this too when we're on, like, whatever your preference or whatever's working for you, like, and you probably feel this way too, like, you have just keep it simple, like whole foods, one ingredient foods that you're combining to make meal, like very basic, like, and like people do overcomplicate it. And especially because we've grown up with that weight loss and diet culture. And I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons why women at this point in time have so many hormonal issues and have so many digestive problems and celiac and all of that. But I think a big piece of it is also this culture that's been ingrained to us. I mean, literally since little girls are like 5 or 6, with restriction and counting calories and cutting out certain food groups and over exercising, which is terrible for your hormones, especially depending on the type of exercise. And it's like, I feel like we all get to this point where our bodies are so out of whack and you're like, oh, well, I don't know what I did. How did I get here?
Yeah. It's really interesting when you like working with women, it's so fascinating and also so awesome when they have that, you know, revelation where they go, oh my gosh, I'm eating more. I have a lot of women that come to me that don't eat breakfast. They're not breakfast eaters. And there are very two different, very school thoughts on intermittent fasting. The women that I'm working with really need blood sugar regulation. So I don't recommend intermittent fasting, but I have a lot of women coming to me that say that they're intermittent fasting, but really they're not eating pretty much all day until dinner time. So, you know, these things are really important. I have women who are eating a little bit more. They're actually eating a breakfast. Their hunger cues are coming back. They're losing a little bit of weight. They're sleeping better. They have energy. And they're like, it's almost like a little bit of a mind blow because this is not how we've been trained to think. We think restriction, we think eating less and working out harder. And when you kind of take that pause and allow your body not to be under that kind of stress, you nourish it, you do the things, you tackle your stress load. It's really just fascinating. And I love when I hear, you know, them like, I can't believe this. I lost weight and my inflammation's down and I'm sleeping, you know, things that haven't happened in like 10 years. It's pretty awesome.
There's two comments I want to make. The first is kind of going back to what Val said about like getting basic with your food, one ingredients, like no process.
Yeah.
Big thing that you just hear all the time is that there's no time to cook a home cooked meal.
I'm so busy. I can't do it or it's expensive.
To me, like I don't get home till 7:30 or 8 o'clock at night and we still cook a home cooked meal every night. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it really no. Like if as long as your protein is defrosted, it takes a half hour. If you go out to eat, you're waiting 45 minutes and hours for food, unless it's fast food, and that's just junk. So like I think there's this perception of like if I'm cooking a home cooked meal, it's gonna take forever. It doesn't. Like
I think if you keep it simple, like you said, keep it simple. Yeah.
Just protein, light seasoning, get your veg and starch on the plate and just it doesn't have to be gourmet. It just has to be nutrient dense.
Okay, I have a suggestion too. There are so many modern convenience food delivery services that the meals are actually really healthy and they don't have any added fat, salt, sugar. I mean, if you are complaining about the time and you have the financial means, then subscribe to one of those services for just even a couple nights a week. It doesn't have to be every single day.
Right.
There's so many options. Listen, I am a mom. I have 3 boys that are teenage-ish years and we have sports and we have a lot of stuff going on. It's really busy.
Yeah.
I can't say I love dinner every night because there's a lot of nights where I'm just tired and it's like, ah. But I also don't have really the luxury of eating out because of celiac disease. So I'm sort of in the boat where, you know what, I have more control and this really, again, applies to everyone. You have more control, quality control essentially over the foods that you're putting in your body when you're prepping them at home. And they don't have to be complicated. And we have so many tools, air fryers and crock pots and Instapots where you can literally make a pulled chicken in like 30 minutes and have some pulled chicken, you know, burrito bowls or something. You know, you can, there's quick things you can make. There's even things at Costco. They're quick and easy, organic, you know, grass-fed beef. There's so many options that can make it pretty quick. And there's also just basic foods. Like you said, there's really basic, simple. It doesn't have to be this beautiful plate for any meal. It just needs to be properly balanced. And I think it's achievable, you know, for most everybody. Preparation is the key, though.
Not everything has to be like fresh. Like frozen vegetables.
Frozen is great. Yes. Just
frozen as good. Yeah. Frozen do. They have still the same nutrients.
They're locked in at the height of their, I mean, like as soon as they're packaged, it's locked in. You're not putting that fresh food on a truck to get shipped to you. Sometimes it can be fresher than what you're getting in the store.
Yeah. Local's great if you have access and you're in an area that has, you know, access to local produce, local farms for, you know, your poultry, your animal sources, and any kind of local and in-season fruits and veggies. That's always a great choice. But yeah, I think in all, really, whole foods, the simpler, the better. It works for celiacs and it works for everybody else. The simpler and more close to its original form and shape, the better. But also when you're grocery shopping, looking at labels and reading, I mean, I don't make pasta sauce from scratch. Okay. I don't have time for that. So that's one thing I don't do, but I can tell you when you look in the back of some of the different brands, you can see there's a quality difference and they're not necessarily the most expensive things out there. If you shop smart, you know, couple bucks, but they're very simple ingredients, or you can find organic. Costco is a great option. So things like that, where you, if you need those little, you know, simple, quick things, really just read your labels and make sure that there's not a ton of weird ingredients in there and sugars and additives and coloring and, oh gosh, preservatives and all that kind of stuff in there. It's very simple ingredients. But generally speaking for diet, making sure you have those macronutrients, which are your proteins, fats, and carbohydrates, and your micronutrients, which are your vitamins and your minerals.
When somebody starts to go down this path, do you see them start to have a detoxification process? And what are some of those side effects that they might experience as, you know, their body's cleaning itself out?
Yeah, you know, most everyone, we do remove gluten from their diet. Gluten is an inflammatory, not just for celiacs or gluten intolerant, but for every body, it's an inflammatory. No matter what piece of the gluten or the piece of the wheat or whatever, there's inflammatory factors for every person. So simply removing that alone, I don't necessarily say that there's like a detoxification, you know, side effect. It's just really fascinating to see people be able to observe inflammation coming down. And, you know, we're also doing a lot of things at the same time. So it's like this whole body approach. So when you're, you know, you're hydrating properly and you're nourishing properly and you're taking out inflammation, it's just this overall, your body beginning to rebalance. I mean, there's women that have changes that they can feel in the first month, you know, I mean, that's the other point too, is that change doesn't happen overnight. We're used to a very quick culture of things, you know, real speedy. And, you know, you've been dysregulated for so long, it's going to take you a little bit to kind of rebuild and rebalance. But yeah, so I think just overall, really, you know, just having that overall sense of feeling better. It's pretty amazing that what food can do and can do.
It's supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it can, it's either fueling you in a good way or it's fueling you in not such a good way. So
I think so for people listening, if they're not aware, I mean, the whole thing with gluten and the wheat crop itself, I mean, from a evolutionary perspective, we've not really been processing that, you know, in our bodies, as long as we have some of the other food groups. And also the crop itself has been so hybridized and taken from its original form that was probably much gentler on our systems. And now it's just this like out of control. thing.
It's just inflammatory.
It does damage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does damage to us. And as a species, you know, like I said, I don't know if like down the line we'll ever evolve, you know, to maybe that shift a little, probably not in our lifetime, but
yeah.
I mean, you know, we just really, it's a newer crop, but it's also been kind of taken from its original form, where maybe we would have been able to digest it a little bit better. I do have a question for you, Melanie. Do you, when you first start working with somebody, and you know, foundational health is so important for you, what are like the first things that you analyzed, you know, maybe from a lab perspective or from a testing perspective to start getting somebody like immediately on the right track? Like, what are the first steps?
So first and foremost, I do focus on foundations. I don't jump just to lab testing oftentimes, because most everyone needs those foundational pieces. You can't heal if you're inflamed. You can't have energy if you're not fueling and you're not hydrating. So a lot of the basics for like at least the first month, we got to really focus on these foundational pieces. But speaking to labs, yes, I do love labs, because I think a lot of people do, because they give us that kind of concrete data that we're used to seeing. We want to see information. I love information. I love concrete information. So one of the tests that I do, one of the basic tests I do actually with everyone, is an HTMA test. And this is a hair tissue mineral analysis test. And this test for your mineral balance. And really, I like to look at the kind of the main minerals, which are your electrolytes. So calcium, potassium, magnesium, and sodium. So we kind of address that. And that kind of, I mean, like I said before, minerals are like your spark plugs, right? They fuel so many reactions in your body. It's insane. We don't talk about them a little bit more, but they're also kind of a big overwhelming topic too, I feel like. So I do look at that. We like to incorporate and make sure we're meeting those mineral balance needs. An MRT food sensitivity test. So this tests for 176 different common foods and chemicals that can be anything from acetaminophen to trout. It's a big list. And what these do is tell us what is causing inflammation. It's not what are you allergic to, it's what is causing inflammation in your body. And the goal of that is to temporarily take those specific foods out of your diet, and temporary is the key, so that we can reduce that inflammation and address everything else. If your body's inflamed, it's sort of like a big old blocker to doing anything else, because your body is going to be focused on that. It's going to be focused on whatever it's inflaming for a reason. So food sensitivity, the other one that I love, love, love is, it's called a GI map. It's a gut microbiome test. And this tests for so many cool things. First and foremost, you know, like parasites, intestinal worms, and really the greatest keys here are your bacterial balance. So it tells us if you have enough good bacteria, how much of it do you have? Are you trending low? Are you too high? What's your bacteria balance? Because we need that good bacteria. That's like, you know, we have like a gut garden, and those are like the flowers. Okay. And then you have the not so great bacteria, which is like an opportunistic. Those are the ones that want to take over. They're like the weeds in your garden. We don't want those to be there. So we can really see what's going on as far as that balance in your gut. And it helps me to really address specifically, once we move beyond foundations, those specific bacteria issues. And then it also will tell us inflammatory responses. It will tell us a bunch of other information, you know, that's going on in your gut. Any responses to gluten you may have if you're not on a gluten-free diet, which most everyone sees inflammation on that one. Also, too, for celiacs, if they're having cross-reaction to foods or cross-reaction in their diet somehow, these two combined, the food sensitivity and the JAMAP, are really, really crucial for kind of giving us that guide of what do we do next. And so again, the goal is to like remove the inflammatory foods so that we can go in and address that bacterial balance, and your body can have the energy to do that. So we can really support that. And then slowly reintroduce those foods that were causing sensitivity before. Once you heal that gut lining, they should be able to be brought back into your diet, hopefully.
One thing that people need to realize is, just like you said, there are certain foods that can cause an inflammatory reaction that might not have caused one
5 years ago,
yep.
even
yep.
1 year ago. It doesn't mean you're allergic. It means that in this moment of time, your body's recognizing it as something that it should not have.
Yep.
And that can change. Just like you said, hopefully you can reintroduce it later. But mm-hmm. for right now, in order for your body to heal, you just have to be okay with not eating white potatoes. Like, what yeah. do you want more? Do you want white potatoes more than you want to feel better?
I think I'm bringing that up
because I just had this conversation with a patient of mine.
Yeah. I think too, with, you know, the gut itself, we have this very delicate, you know, structure in there where if you're, you know, a whole bunch of reasons that can happen, but I'm sure a lot of you have heard about leaky gut. We've heard this mm-hmm. term around leaky gut. And really it's like your gut has these tight junctions that kind of, they allow a certain amount and certain things to come through. But when they become weak and they're more open, we'll say, larger bits of your food and proteins can get in and sort of seep through your gut lining into your bloodstream. And that's when your body has that sort of reaction, like a food sensitivity, where it's like, I don't know what the heck this is. And I'm going to mount a response. Exactly. I'm going to mount a response. And here, now you're going to have a rash or, you know, whatever, you have this inflammatory or this immune response. And so, yeah, really, once you address the issues going on in your gut and you heal that space, you rebuild your gut tissue, you rebuild your gut, the mucus lining in your gut, all of those defenses, that space shouldn't be open anymore for those particles to come through. And that's kind of the gist of, you know, taking out inflammatory foods, really mending that gut, you know, itself, the tissues and everything else. And then being able to reintroduce those, you should have that nice lining in there that protects and doesn't let all the things through anymore. So right. I see a lot of people that just start to reduce. They remove foods from their diet. A lot of celiacs will do this and they're like, man, I'm eating like 10 things because everything else upsets me, or I break out in a rash. And it's like, oh gosh, no, we don't want to reduce forever. We don't want to take these foods out of your diet forever because you're missing out on a lot of nutrients that way.
Mm-hmm. I do want to say this because it's an important piece, especially for those of you that are, you know, trying to conceive or expecting, or maybe have small babies. What Melanie is saying, so true IgE mediated allergies, which is when they see if you have an allergy to a food, is actually not very common. Yes, they're on the rise. Yes, there's a lot of people with them. They're not super common, but intolerances and sensitivities to food, like Melanie is saying, which are IgG, IgM mediated reactions usually over time, are extremely yeah. common. So sensitivities and intolerances are, which is why Melanie says she looks at that. So that's something to keep in mind, but I do want to say this as an IBCLC, mom's gut health ends up being baby's gut health.
Yes, so absolutely.
It's very important to, you know, think like long-term, especially if you're going to have children or you just had a baby or you're nursing. You want to pay attention to those things because your gut health, you know, baby is first experiencing that during birth, depending on how they were birthed, and then them nursing and what you're eating and how your gut health is affecting them long term. And we see this a lot in babies. There's not a ton of allergies, but there are food intolerances and sensitivities and things that mom ends up having to take out of her diets. And they tend to be the culprits, you know, that you're talking about. Like, usually it starts with the poor quality dairy, you know, there's cross reactivity with soy, and then you have to look at the gluten in the egg and all that. So, I mean, there are things to consider as far as what Melanie is saying, but I think as parents, we don't really, a lot of people don't know that or understand that yes. or realize like everything about your gut health is so important and so important to heal if you're going to have babies.
Yeah, it's such a good point. It's really such a good point.
I just saw first of all, a couple episodes ago, maybe a month or so ago, we talked about gluten intolerances and how it can directly affect women's fertility, because if your gut is so inflamed, you might not be absorbing minerals. And then your body doesn't have the energy capacity, mineral capacity in order to sustain a pregnancy. So you might be able to get pregnant, but miscarriage rate is higher. And I firmly believe that's what happened with my first miscarriage. But there's a lot of data that supports that dad's gut health, dad's overall health prior to conception drives home how healthy and well-balanced baby is too.
That's interesting.
So if you're going to make changes, husband,
all get on board, get the whole house on board.
There's new studies that are suggesting that it actually, that's his cool. gut health is, it plays a huge role in how healthy baby is. I mean, really fascinating. We've seen that sperm count, sperm motility is just like on the hard decline. That's gut health too.
Yeah.
And stress.
Yeah. I know. It's things that affect gut. Well, and I think we put the emphasis on mother, you know, or the partner caring only because, you know, that seems like the most logical thing. And it just seems like dad, you know, only contributes his 50%, but you know, the quality and the health of that 50% matters, even though we're nourishing, carrying, you know, and delivering. So we kind of we forget about that. I think we leave that piece out, but it's important.
Behind stress, a powerful woman is a man. That's how the saying
is. Healthy sperm? No, that's what you're saying, right? Behind every empowered woman is healthy sperm.
Don't tagline that.
Not trademarking that one.
I mean, but we can make t-shirts, guys.
Yeah.
So Melanie, what else do you feel like women need to know to get good?
Managing stress.
Yeah. Like what? Okay. Managing stress. So how can what's your recommend? Okay. We live in a crazy, crazy world with crazy schedules. You just said that even with three teenage boys, there's like no time, I'm sure. But how can people, what do you recommend to get that under control? Cause that's a big piece of people's issues too.
Absolutely. I mean, we can't remove stress. It sounds amazing. And if there was a magic wand, I'm sure we'd all be in line to use it. So we have to learn how to manage it. And there's, you know, stress is either we have that emotional stress and we also, which most of us deal with, we also can have physical stress. So, you know, that can be whether, you know, you're working out too hard and causing some stress on your body. That can be things like digestive dysfunction where you've got some distress going on that way. So there's a lot of different versions of stress. I think it's important to like understand what that means for you. But stress really can impact, you know, definitely our gut health, definitely our digestion. When you're stressed, your digestion actually will slow down. So that slows down motility, that will slow down your metabolism, which can then in turn impact your weight. That can impact, you know, obviously your energy, your sleep, your mood, all the things. So stress is a big one. And there's lots of different things you can do. You don't have to be able to go afford and have a massage once a week or, you know, anything expensive. It could be simple things that you do at home. Things like breath work, breathing exercises. There's plenty of different variations of that, but that can be just a few minutes at a time. That can be something you do at your desk at work. That could be at your home office. It can be in the car waiting for the kids to come out from practice. It could be, you know, before you go to bed. Stress, I think, you know, moving your body, doing breath work, saying yes less. You don't have to like overcommitting yourself. Your kids don't have to do all the things. If you were a parent, your kids don't have to do all the things. It's important to have a balance and teach them that as well, in my opinion. But, you know, saying yes less and saying no more. You don't have to do everything you're asked to. So getting out into nature. A lot of people like to do tapping. So there's a lot of things. Gosh, hanging out with friends, laughing. I mean, being with your family. So there's a lot of things that don't cost money. They just take intentional choice. And again, it's that power of having control or trying to gain control, and being aware that, wow, I have a lot going on. I think it's very easy, especially for parents and women who may be juggling careers and motherhood. Motherhood in itself is a huge, whole, busy world. So if you're not working outside of the home and you are a mom who's at home and you're managing your children and your household, that is a very taxing, busy job in itself. So, you know, really recognizing that, wow, I have a lot on my plate, and looking at these different things you can implement. Maybe it's you do a bubble bath, or you like to take a 30-minute walk by yourself and listen to a podcast or, you know, your favorite music or something, just to make that intentional choice is step number one. And there's a lot you can do that's free. It doesn't cost money.
I'll have to find this. I think I sent it to my husband in the 8,000 that I send to him a day. But it was like, traditionally, whenever I tell somebody to do breath work, I tell them about box breathing. So
mm-hmm. yeah,
hold for four, exhale, you know. But this guy was talking about how to immediately downregulate your fight or flight response to the vagus nerve. And I'm going to have you guys do this real quick. So just so that you can see. So it was like, you take a really big breath in through your nose, like to the point where you think you're filling up your lungs, and hold it. So breathe in, and then you take one short at the end, and then you slowly exhale. So it's like you fill to max capacity, hold, and then you go, but that little inhales the tiniest parts of your lung.
Oh.
And immediately starts to downregulate. And I started doing that, and I felt so like an immediate
good. I just did it and that actually felt really good.
But it's
like, I felt a little pushed beyond my limit.
Yeah.
Maybe that was making more stress. I don't know. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Unregulate your fight or flight response whenever my lung capacity feels like it's suffocating. However, it's like it's a high, like, gosh, I don't want to say what I think it is because watch it be like much far less. It was like it downregulates like 20 times faster than just doing, and it's quick. So if you just feel like you're in a moment of like a heightened response, just doing that one quick, like deep breath in, which we always tell ourselves, but then the little at the end is supposed to really downregulate your vagus nerve.
Yeah. And there's lots of, you know, YouTube videos. If you are new to that and you're like, what the heck is box breathing and what do I do? Look up like even diaphragmatic breathing. There's some great videos on that that can help with your digestion. There's box breathing, which is just for like helping with that stress response. So there's a lot of different breathing techniques. A lot of my clients do these in the evening before they go to bed. They practice a little bit of breath work. It's just really key because stress, we just deal with it pretty much every day. We're constantly running on, you know, there's, I think I always say there's like probably 100 different tabs open in my brain at one time. And that can be a lot of, that can be a lot of stress, you know? So yeah, there's definitely resources out there to look and see for yourself how to do those. And there's a lot of free things just like that. Free, you know, tutorials on breath work, and things you can implement on your own at home, but you have to make that decision and that conscious decision to do it.
It's just, it's amazing how many times I know when with my first pregnancy, we were seeing an insane amount of people in the office. And I would look at the list in the waiting room and see how many people were there. And I would stop breathing. And there's a person I work with that would follow and help take notes for me because I was slow and large. And she would go, "You need to breathe." And I was like, "Oh, you're right. I am not breathing." But it's like, we get stressed out. I don't know why. Your body just forgets to breathe.
Yeah, you forget to breathe, and it's important. Because
it's a huge way to just downregulate. I mean, we do know why we forget to breathe. Everything pulls away into the extremities for an adrenaline response. But text messages and emails should not cause that much of an adrenaline response.
Yes. I mean, you have these. Technology is great, but you have these features on your smartphone. You can turn on your, your focus mode on an Apple phone. And so you don't have those distractions. My phone for my work goes off. I don't have any incoming emails and things after my business hours, because I learned real quick that I was getting these in on the weekends, and you feel like you have to respond. And I absolutely want to respond, but I also have to honor like my own stress management, my family, my time, just as you would if you worked, you know, at an office job and went somewhere, you know, you can't. So anyhow, I mean, we have, you know, focus time on our smartphones. You can turn them off at night. You know, we have lots of different things that we can implement. Smartwatches have, I know mine does, like a breathing. You can set a certain amount of time and it will buzz for when you breathe in and hold. And so you don't even have to necessarily like watch a video. If you have something like that on your smartwatch, you might want to look into that too. Definitely some good stuff.
What is there anything else, Melanie, that you recommend or you think women should be doing to kind of start to get those foundational pieces under control?
You know, I think just taking a minute to really analyze your day, analyze your life. Take a second, stop with the busy and everything else. Take a minute for yourself. If you're in the bath, you're on a walk, think about your day. One thing that's great is you can keep like a journal, and you can journal like the food. And I'm not talking about counting calories and like, you know, getting all crazy. I just log what you're eating in a day. It's really interesting when women do this with me and they go back and go, wow, I didn't realize I was doing that. You know, I didn't realize I was grabbing for that food so often, or I like they have this idea in their head that, oh, I eat really healthy. And then they look at what they've logged, and it's okay, because we all start somewhere, and I don't judge, because, you know, nobody's perfect, but it's very helpful to analyze for yourself these things. Again, it doesn't take a lot of money to do. You can have a notepad, you can have it on your phone, and just, you know, take note for yourself and see what it is. What are your habits? What are you doing every day? Are you grabbing for a coffee first thing in the morning? Are you having like a 3 o'clock like exhaustion period where you're like, I need something, I need a coffee, I need caffeine, I need sugar? So it's good to just analyze those things. Same with hydration. You can really, you know, again, lots of options on watches or smartphones or just whatever your strategy is. But, you know, understanding how much water you're actually drinking in a day, things like that, I think are good. Just that mindfulness. What am I doing? What does my daily life actually look like?
I think on the flip side of that, like, I don't think most women don't realize how much they are under eating. So they think they're eating a lot and they are not eating a lot.
I totally agree with that. That's so, so true. That's so true. And perhaps maybe a little bit, we've sort of, you know, glamorized that. I'm not saying everyone's like this, but it's a little bit glamorized that you're eating not so much. And 1200 calories is really like the calorie intake of a toddler. It's a child's diet. I don't focus specifically on calories per se, but it's really about eating that well-rounded, you know, snack or breakfast. It doesn't have to be huge, but really making sure you're getting those macros in with your meals.
There's one in particular person that I'm thinking of, but I remember her being like, I can't lose weight, I can't do anything, my hormones are out of control. And I said, what did you eat today? And they two eggs, like specifically like two eggs, and that was a pretty big breakfast to me. So I just skipped lunch, and I was like, two eggs is that lack of 140 calories. You burn that. Well,
there's only 6 grams of protein in one egg. So if you're eating an egg and you're like, oh, good, and a coffee, you're really, that's that protein piece. You need to be eating more than that. 30 to 35 grams on average of protein. Of course, you have to make sure you're able to break it down properly and all that stuff. Right. But yeah, I mean, protein is what's fueling so many things in your body. You got to eat it.
And as we approach, the more I read about this, as women, as we approach and get into our 40s, you need that high quality protein and fat so than ever, more so than you did in your teens and 20s. It's so critical for the hormones and the transition your body is going to go through, but also that's when people really start to complain about their bodies. Like in those late 30s, early 40s, into your mid 40s, our body's changing. Well, where is your protein at? If you're exercising, where is your healthy fat? How much protein are you consuming? Because you're not going to make any changes if you're out there lifting weights three times a week, but you're eating one egg for breakfast. Yeah. You know, like Melania said. Yeah. It's critical as we age, and I say this because I'm very close to 40, you know, that there's a lot of these things that I didn't realize and that we need to be taking into consideration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, animal proteins itself, those help build your tissues, and you're working out. Do you want your muscles to grow and be strong, or do you want them to go away? And I think, you know, again, it's just everything in balance, like you're saying. So I totally agree with you. As we age too, really making sure that we include quality protein in our diet is crucial, you know. And a lot of times those proteins, you know, eggs and grass-fed beef, those things also add that other healthy, like omega-3, those healthy fats that you want too. So you can kind of get a little bit of both worlds in some of those foods as well.
Before we wrap it up, Melanie, what are some other good like fat sources? Because we talked a lot about fat, we talked about protein, but like what are some other quality fat sources that women can really be like aiming for if they're not aware of that?
Yeah, I think it's important to know that food first is the best approach. So, excuse me, I don't think, you know, jumping for a supplement to help, but supplements can be helpful in the interim. But grass-fed beefs are great. You know, pasture-raised poultry is great. If you look at olives, olive oil, avocados or avocado oil, there are some, you know, different nuts that are good for fats as well. So there's quite a bit of different healthy fats you can incorporate into your diet, into your meals. Dairy is another one. Full fat dairy is great. And again, we're talking in moderation, in a proper balance. I shouldn't say moderation, but a proper balance. So it's not just chug this giant, like full fat, you know, glass of milk, or eat just this full fat, like yogurt. It's what can you add into it? What can you add? I think we're so focused on restriction. What is one thing you can add into your diet today? Can you add a little bit of some quality oil? Can you add a little bit? Can you add some nuts? Can you add, you know, what can you add is kind of really what I like to help women to do, because a lot of us are so used to restricting.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. It's like we want to take everything away that we forget to add things in.
Yeah. It's just a matter of replacing the not so great with better. or if you're not, you know, if you're not including those things in your diet, to add them in. So, you know, whole foods are great and it's simple. Really keeping things simple makes it so easy. I took that approach from day one from my celiac diagnosis. And I like to remind women all the time, it's just keeping it simple, and what works for you maybe isn't the same thing as what works for another person. And that's okay. It's what works for you and your diet, your lifestyle. Everything is so bio-individual. So we have to stop looking at what everyone else is doing and really just focus on what works for ourselves, which sounds kind of selfish, but it's not.
It's not.
Well, our chemistries are all different. And, you know, I always say this to people, but where, depending on your ancestral background, where your ancestors spent most of their time and where, you know, evolutionarily, like, you know, your chemistry was developing, it's not the same for all of us. You know, everyone thinks, I can be great on a keto diet because these five people did. Oh, I can eat all this meat. No, some of us, I'm AB positive. Those people do not eat a lot of meat because they don't really need it and it doesn't do well in my system. Like, if you have to listen. We talk about this all the time. Working with a professional is important, but also the simplest thing you can do is listen to your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's telling you something. If you're eating a lot of something and you're getting certain reactions, and again, keeping a diary is a good point of that. Like, maybe you just shouldn't be having so much of it or any of it. Like, you know,
and
you,
really,
yeah.
Really just thinking too, again, it's like that root cause is it's why. Why, you know, a lot of people think, oh, this is causing a reaction, so I'm just going to take it out.
Yeah.
And then this cascade happens. And I see this a lot with celiac women is they'll just keep removing. I kind of mentioned earlier, they just keep removing things. And, you know, you're left with like maybe 12 foods you can eat. Well, why are you having a reaction to those, all these other foods you remove from your diet? Why? What's the why? It's the root. What's the root of the issue? That is what needs to be addressed, not a pill or a shake or a fancy diet or like, you know, whatever Instagrammer you want to follow. There's lots of different ways to be healthy out there. And like you said, our chemistries are different. Our backgrounds are different. Our health goals and what's going on with our body is very different than the next person. We may have some similarities. And even in the world of celiac disease, I mean, the women that I know even personally with celiac, we had totally different types of symptoms. And we also deal with some very different symptoms, you know, as the years went on. So there's a lot of different things that factor in, which I love because it should be very bio-individual. Our health really should be so bio-individual.
So Melanie, you are, for everyone on Instagram, or if you have Instagram, Melanie is at, she is at Roots Restored Wellness. She does have a link tree there. We'll include everything in the show notes with all of her links and websites. But for anyone without Instagram, Melanie, how can people find you? What is your website? Are you on Facebook?
Yes, I'm on Facebook-ish. I'm mostly on Instagram, but I am on Facebook. I kind of feed into Facebook. So I'm on there. My website, it's a long one. Maybe I'll just give it to you. But yeah, I definitely have a website on there. It's chock full of information on everything that I cover with each woman that I work with. It's pretty detailed from nutritional assessments, the kind of support, how much support, you know, different access to recipes that I can provide. So it's really kind of explains the different programs that I offer. And I do have a discount code for today. If you listeners will like it. So I have some spots open in my April, program. It's a 3 month, it's called a Simple Roots, 3 month program. And, that's really kind of what the things we're talking about. It's all really foundational approach. It's the simple stuff. It's all the foundational things, like we're talking about blood sugar, minerals, fats, hydration, digestion, diet. So I have a code. It's EWP.
Nice.
For Empowered Women Podcast 10. So that will give it a 10% discount, and it's good through the end of the month. So if you want to snag one of those spots, but again, if you head to the website, it really explains what is in that. There's a lot in those. That doesn't include the GI map or, you know, the food sensitivity. That's a 6 month program, but the 3 month program is mineral balancing and really those basics that, gosh, I feel like everyone really, really needs, when they're starting their health journey. So.
Now your 3 and your 6 month program, are they group coaching or is everything one-on-one?
It's absolutely one-on-one. So it's very, very custom. It's very one-on-one. Support calls are one-on-one. So yeah, it's very personalized.
Okay, awesome.
Melanie's website is beautiful.
It is.
Just go look at it. Just look at her website. It's so organized.
You're sweet. I actually did it myself.
I paid someone to do mine. And honestly, like I love mine, but I looked at yours and I was like, oh my God, that is so beautiful. Like who did
that?
You're so sweet. I actually am like, I don't love it. So, you know, we're our own worst critics, right?
We are.
It has all the information and, you know, anyone can reach me. I do complimentary calls. So if you have questions and you're like, man, can this lady even help me? Or, you know, here's what I have going on. Am I a good fit for you? Definitely they can do that either on the link tree on Instagram, or they can book that through my website. It's a free call. I'll spend, you know, 15, 20 minutes and we can really chat about, you know, whatever it is on your mind that you're concerned about as far as like, you know, what to do next. You know, how can I help you really is what it's about. So, I encourage you to do that. It's a great chance to get your questions answered.
Awesome. Do you want to ask the question?
No, you can go ahead, Sarah. We always ask everybody, all our guests get this question. So we want to hear your response.
Okay. What
is one thing women can do? It doesn't have to be nutrition. It doesn't have to be in your world of expertise. What is one thing women can do to feel empowered? Or it could be in your world.
I mean, start paying attention to yourself. I think that we give so much to our families, to outside of ourselves. And, you know, I don't think we're necessarily wired to always think about ourselves, but it's not selfish. It's important to pay attention. It helps your health and your emotional well-being. So I think just take a minute to reflect on yourself and check in with yourself.
I love it.
That's so a true. Good one. Yeah, that is a really good one.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more like it, make sure you subscribe to the Empowered Women Pod and rate us 5 stars. Please feel free to also write a review on the podcast. It really does help to spread the Empowered Women message, and it moves us up in the podcast rankings. Plus, we love to hear from our listeners. You can follow us on Instagram at Empowered Women Pod, or if you have a question and want to reach out to Val or I, you can email us at empoweredwomenpod@icloud.com.